If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 346. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, I saw you post about how you're getting some 40 degree mornings down there now. How are you surviving?
Oh, it's weird because in the morning you have to dress one way and then it's 75 in the afternoon. So you literally have to completely change your style because it goes from chilly to hot really quick. I guess not hot, but it's not 75 is definitely not jacket weather. So,
yeah, that's basically like Maine falls right there. Like New England falls. It's like morning driving to work, you gotta throw the sweatshirt on by 9, 10 a.m. or so. It's gotten up into the 60s. Oh, you can take that sweatshirt off. It's pretty weird the fall, but we'll be out in the hot Arizona temperatures next week, but a week away. So looking forward to that, though it's still in the 90s out there. So I'm hoping it drops a little more temperature-wise. It's supposed to, but we shall see. But yeah, looking forward to that. Still got some good postseason baseball. As of now, we get the Yankees making the first World Series since 2009. And so waiting on the winner of the National League. You might already know the winner by the time you're listening to this, but we're recording mid-afternoon here on Sunday. So we still got Game 6 upcoming tonight. Dodgers and Mets. That'll be fun to see. That's been a pretty back and forth series right there. I'm just rooting for anybody but the Yankees at this point. Everyone knows I'm a Red Sox fan. And it's funny too, because at my current job, I started there a few months after the Yankees won the 2009 World Series. And I met this woman who's become, she's about my mother's age. She's a big Yankees fan. So we go back and forth. We become friends. We poke fun at each other. But I like to tell her that I'm her curse, because they have not won a World Series since she met me. So I still got that going for now. So hopefully I can keep it going. And it means like I got to root for the Dodgers, the Mets. I'm not sure who I'll root for there. But yeah, a lot of good baseball still to be played. And we got Arizona Fall Leagues in full swing right now. We're about 2 weeks into that. Still got some baseball here. And we'll be continuing our discussion from last week. We talked about some late season notable performances, both good and bad, on the hitting side. We'll be heading over to the pitching side today. We got about 10, 11 names or so on the list of guys that ended strong in, or not so strong, in August and September. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our dynasty and prospect rankings, plus a lot of daily write-ups and so much more. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. All right, let's start off with some of the poor performers in the second half, or not only the second half, but the final 2 months or final third of the season. And we're starting off with Jared Jones, who was one of the better pitchers in baseball to start the season, but ended pretty poorly in August and September with a 5.87 ERA. Still had a above average strikeout rate though, and the expected metrics were a bit better. He had a 4.73 FIP, 3.86 xFIP, and a 4.37 Sierra. So it wasn't absolutely terrible. A tale of two seasons for Jones. Overall, though, evened out to a 4.14 ERA and 1.19 whip in 22 starts. But again, he was coming out looking like an ace early in the season, and we were ranking him as such, or at least getting close to that, but then tailed off later on in the season. Now, my one issue with Jones is, Chris, we talked about this before, he hasn't established a legitimate third offering. He was with the four-seamer and slider, a combined about 84% of the time. Then he throws a curveball and changeup. Both of those have been terrible offerings. The curveball has a 348 batting average against and an 870 slug. And then changeup is 317 batting average against and 561 slug. So he has not been able to really go to a third offering. And if he's not on with his four-seamer or slider in any given outing, he's probably going to struggle because he only has the one pitch to go to. So I don't know. If he develops a third pitch, I'll feel better about ranking him highly. I actually have dropped him. I still rank him pretty decently because he's a talented arm, but there's definitely a lot of question marks here of can he establish a third offering because he hasn't done so yet. Where are you at on Jared Jones now? Because, again, obviously there's plenty of talent there, but like an incomplete arsenal, I'd say.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was with all these guys. I always want to see like what changed. Did anything in particular really happen to cause the performance or whatnot? And for Jones, it's interesting. When he came back, he actually utilized the curveball much more and the four-seam less. Saw the curve usage jump to around 16% in September. In process, the changeup usage did drop and the four-seam usage dropped. Looking at that, it's interesting to see. The four-seam's obviously in a very strong pitch. I think it's the best pitch in his arsenal, averaged over 97. It's 17 inches of IVB, which is really good from his release height. Good horizontal on that pitch as well. The slider is a solid offering, had a positive run value this year, as you mentioned. It's heavily used offering. And I'm just curious if he really works on developing a curve or a change this offseason. He's got them. It's just, can he further develop them? And yeah, I think that we'll see. I think that's probably the big key to his success. Is there a change here with either of these offerings? The interesting thing of note is that we did actually see the curveball shape change a bit in the month of September, having more depth to it, which that's an encouraging sign, and a little less sweeping action. He lost about 2 inches of horizontal while adding some depth to it. So I'm curious to track and see like how that plays. If it continues, again, it had a 1,000 slug against it still. So that's obviously worth noting. But the whiff rate on it did jump to 36% in a small sample. So I'm looking at that and saying, like, he further developed this. I look at the changeup, actually pretty interesting offering too, that added some horizontal in the month of September, almost like he was tinkering with both those pitches a little bit. And the induced vertical, it actually had a little more depth to it as well. So yeah, I think that's something to monitor this offseason with Jared Jones is, like, can he truly establish one of those third offerings? The curveball location is the issue. If you look at the heat map, it's just he leaves it center. It's no wonder it got hit so hard. The location on it's just not good compared to the slider and even the four-seam too. So I think watching those things is important. Overall, coming back from injury is, okay, how would he perform? First start was really bad, 5 earned in 4 innings. He pitched fine for the most part outside of a start in Cincy on September 21st. It was 6 earned across 5 innings. Other than that, not bad. I think that the numbers weren't great, but I do think there's some interesting things maybe he was working on, especially towards the end of the year when they knew that they were out of contention. I don't know. I look at Jones and think that if you can buy low on him, I would. He just turned 23. The talent's there. The arsenal's there. I'm curious what his offseason looks like, but yeah, I'm not really fazed by what he did. I'm actually encouraged in a way.
Yeah, you mentioned that curveball heat map. It's not great. The four-seamer is mostly middle up. Slider, he's down and away. No issues there. Even the changeup, he kept down for the most part. So that was decent. But yeah, that curveball is all over the place. Even some little red in the upper part of the zone there. He didn't have a good feel for it. But even though, like you mentioned, the metrics weren't great on that pitch in September, but it at least shows that they're trying something there, right? With different movement profiles, using it more. So there's at least an attempt there. Maybe they're like, all right, maybe try this, that we think long-term this could be something that works, even though it didn't in September overall. But they're at least working on it. And obviously, we've talked about this as well. Pittsburgh's player development, pretty good. You know, obviously they've done really well on the pitching side. So this definitely gives you a little bit more confidence there that they can try to figure that out. But yeah, he'll really need to develop that third pitch, whether it's the curve, the chains, or even any other pitch that they might work on this offseason, a sinker, cutter, whatever. Needs that third pitch. And he also gets hit around a little bit too hard as well. I'd like to see that some of those quality of contact metrics come down. He was about 10% barrel, a little under 90 mile an hour average EV, and 44.5% hard hit rate. But slider is a very good offering. Fastball is good. Yeah, really just needs that third pitch. So yeah, I'm good with you. I'm okay buying low. Maybe we did go a little bit too high with him, and I was guilty of it as well back when he was dominating earlier in the season. I don't think he's going to be an ace long-term, but could he still be maybe a top 25 fantasy arm? Yeah, I think that outcome is still in there. And similar thought process to this next guy as well, who's also 23 years old, and that's Taj Bradley, who, my God, he had like three mini seasons within his one season this year. Overall, at a 25 starts, 4.11 ERA, and well over a K per inning. Had a dominant 9-start stretch middle part of the season where he was arguably the best pitcher in baseball, or at least one of the best few, but then flipped the switch and ended the season very poorly with a 6.45 ERA and 2.94 batting average against, 1.59 whip in the last 2 months of the season. K rate dropped. He was below average K rate down the stretch, and FIP, XFIP, Sierra were all in the fours, so better than that surface ERA. But similar issues with Bradley, at least. He gets hit too hard. He's allowed a barrel percentage above 10% each of his first 2 years. Average EV has been 91.2 on the dots each of the first 2 years. He does have a deeper arsenal, at least one that he uses more and doesn't have. You know, he's actually established the third and fourth pitch. He was four-seamer, splitter, cutter, curveball. The cutter being a pretty good offering for him. Curveball, you know, has a decent whiff rate at 35%. He doesn't have those same issues in terms of establishing those other offerings as Jones does, but it's been wildly inconsistent and is giving up way too much hard contact, which I think is part of the issue there. So Bradley here, Chris, how are you feeling with him? Would you be looking to buy low on him like you were with Jones?
Maybe. He did finish the year on a high note, at least the last two starts, which was an encouraging sign. I'm looking at the pitch usage, and it's interesting because the cutter usage jumped substantially during the final month of the season to 32% from hovering around 20% all year until the final month. And he's okay, using the four-seam and cutter pretty much. And the splitter usage dropped, the curveball usage dropped pretty substantially. And looking at those last couple of games, it was more the same. Like when he found the success, it was really just dialing in, and the curveball usage was actually at an all-time low in the last two starts when he did get things back together. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting. I think this arsenal is good. I like it. I don't like that he gets hit around and gets hit hard. I think the biggest issue with that is just the fact that his four-seam location was all over the place this year. Just a lot of inconsistencies there, which hurt him. There was times the cutter location wasn't good either. And so I look at that and it's okay. Like, you've got to locate those offerings better. Your four-seam has the potential. It's got, you know, good characteristics to it. Extremely high IVB. I look at it and say, you got to get better results than what you got this year from that pitch. It was consistently, especially the last 2 months, getting hit around pretty good, batting average of over 300 in the final 2 months, which is a little bit discouraging there. Missed less bats, but I know the talent and the pitch shape is there to thrive. The curveball shape's actually pretty good too. You're looking at 62 inches of drop on it, a little bit of horizontal with that pitch. It has all the, it checks the box, at least when you're looking at like just on paper. But again, like, where are you locating? And that's the biggest problem. It's like he has zero feel for where the curveball is going, which is a little bit concerning. I do like the splitter. I think it obviously splitter's a pitch that's going to be inconsistent from time to time. Right now it's just three velo bands, the cutter and splitter in the same velo band, which is fine, but then he really dials it back for the curveball too. So, I don't know. I look at Bradley and I think that, again, it's a young pitcher. He won't turn 24 till almost the end of spring training next year. And you say, okay, he's shown us the flashes of being a high-end arm. The issues, okay, I mean, he's had a couple of bad starts that really just blew it up. He had a 9-earned run start on June the 1st. Then he went on that really hot stretch. And then in August, it just, you know, went downhill and there were quite a few issues. But to see him get back and finish the year strong, to see him throw near 140 innings was encouraging. I think there's things that can be fixed here, and I'm banking on that happening. So we'll see. I think it's just a couple tweaks here and there. Might be a release characteristic of one of those pitches, just locating a tad bit better. And I think Taj Bradley's more than capable of doing that. So, yeah, I am buying in where I can.
Yeah, it's definitely a command issue here. Like, not so much a control issue, because walk rate's been pretty much right around league average both years. He's right in that low to mid 8% range. MLB averaged 8.4. So command really needs to improve here, though. You mentioned that curveball. That's a really wild heat map with the curveball. Cutters are right. Splitters are right. Four seams are right. But the curveball really needs to improve there. Even the splitter, I feel like he maybe could throw lower in the zone than he does. A little bit too high on the splitter, at least in my opinion. But because just seeing him miss, or at least miss the barrel a bit more, would be also really encouraging. But yeah, I'm definitely still in on Bradley. I still have high hopes for him. Yeah, pretty similar range for me to Jared Jones. Which one of these two would you rather invest in moving forward, Chris? Jones or Bradley?
I think it's Jones for me. Just, I think he's flashed the upside of being like a top 15 arm more consistently. And even though Bradley went on those hot stretches, like, I just look at the profiles and think that Jones has the more sustainability, in my opinion, because he's doing that. He was doing that all with two pitches. It's okay, as we saw or see the progression of potentially a third pitch, it's like, I really believe in that profile.
I might actually lean Bradley. They're very close for me, because I think Bradley has already established the third and fourth offering where Jones hasn't. If Jones does establish a third offering, that could change. But for now, I think I'll lean Bradley. But again, these two are very close for me moving forward. Both could be top 25 arms, or maybe they settle into just being inconsistent, high upside, low floor, SP3-4 types of fantasy. That's also a possibility. Next name here, we're going Walker Buehler, who really, it wasn't just late in the season, but you know, he's bad for the most part all year. But coming back off of missing the entire 2023 season, he just wasn't the same. And we already saw him starting to trend down before having the injury and all that missed time. K rate has actually dropped now for four straight seasons, from 29.2% back in 2019, back when he was at the peak of his powers, so to speak, down to 28.6, 26, 21.2, and 18.6% this past season, along with a 5.38 ERA and 155 WHIP in 16 starts, 75 innings. Did have that one nice start in the postseason so far, but for the most part, it's been pretty mediocre for Walker Buehler, to the point where you gotta wonder, I'm not wondering if the old Buehler will come back, but can he even be a guy that you can rely on for a full season, and a guy that you can actually have on your roster and not just be a waiver wire fodder, so to speak, because it's gotten pretty bad, Chris, here. And yeah, give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, because he was coming back off a major injury and missed the entire season, as I mentioned. Like, for instance, the four seamer has, which used to be a pretty decent pitch for him, has been absolutely terrible the last two seasons, batting average above 340. Both in 2024 and 2022 before the injury. So I don't know. How much faith do you have that Walker Buehler can bounce back and even be a serviceable fantasy arm at this point?
I would say almost zero. But then he comes out and does something pretty interesting in the most recent playoff start against the Mets back on the 16th, where he looked like a different arm in the sense of he was using the sweeper significantly more. He upped that usage to 23%. Four seam seemed like a different pitch, honestly. Like, it was over 20 inches of IVB consistently. Like, he just looked completely different, and not like he had at really any point in the 2024 season, which was like, okay, like, this is interesting to see, because in a way it's okay. He lost a bit of velo. He set like sub 94. This season he set 95. But in the process, it was like, all right, you see the jump from going from like 16 and a half inches of IVB up to 20 inches, which is pretty crazy. Like, I have a hard time explaining that, honestly. But, and then I see the results back, and I see the increased sweeper usage, which is a good pitch. Like, the sweeper had some solid traits this year. It was the only other pitch outside of his cutter that had a positive run value against it. So it's like, all right, then you want to see it used more. If you have a good pitch like this, why use it so little? He ups that usage, 23% usage, up from 8% in the regular season, and it thrives. Like, it looked really good. It missed a ton of bats. It had the movement you wanted to see, 13 plus inches of sweeping action, some decent depth. Excuse me, I was reading the wrong line. That was 20 inches of sweeping action, which is just crazy to look at and see. And that was actually compared to 15 inches in the regular season. So I don't know what's going on with Buehler. I don't know how he just made that incredible jump this year, or this playoff start, at least from what it was this year. And I'm monitoring it pretty closely. I think that Buehler's tried to do a few things since coming back, hasn't worked all that well. I just want to see him like take a step back, reduce the arsenal a bit. You're using so many pitch types, figure out what works, focus on that, and get back to who you were. Now, do I believe there's still, you know, something to want from Buehler? I don't know. Like, he's 30 years old now, two TJs. I'm not like super infatuated with a bounce back, but I do think the cost is probably cheaper than it's ever been, which does lead me to say maybe it creates a decent buying opportunity. Just given the fact that he won't cost you very much, maybe you can at least see where it goes. But I'm not like, you know, going out. He's not a must get right now, just given it was one playoff start that he looked good, and he's been pretty poor for the rest of 2024.
Yeah, you let me know what I was going to say about how he has seven different pitches he goes with. And there was another pitcher, I can't remember who it was, that it kind of leads me to ask the question, like, how many pitches are too many? Like, how many different pitch types can one person throw? I mean, obviously, we like to have a diverse arsenal, but, man, seven feels like it's a bit too much. And you just scale that back and really focus on maybe five of them or something. And, yeah, granted, three of those seven were under 10 during the season, sweeper, changeup, and slider, even though he's using the sweeper more. So maybe the changeup and slider are ones he gets rid of. Those have always changeups always been below 10% for the most part for him. But you know, I think a massive key here is going to be, you know, if that, you know, fastball can get better in 2025. And you mentioned that one start, how it looked. You know, is that the new fastball that we see from him moving forward? And is it going to be a more effective fastball for more than just one start? That's the major question, because you can't get by with a four-seamer that's .342 batting average against and a .700 slug, or like what in 2022 even when he was .368 and .618. He's been over a .600 slug and over a .340 batting average against on his four-seamer each of the last 2 years. Like, that cannot happen if you want to be an impactful starter. So I'm not like 2 feet out the door on Buehler, but I would really need it to be cheap or nearly free to really want to invest here. I still have some hope. I mean, you mentioned some of the changes that he made in that one start, and obviously was good in the past, holding out some hope that he can be a viable arm and maybe get further away from the injury and get more comfortable back in 2025, have a normal spring training and off season this year, which I think is huge for pitchers, obviously. So we'll see. So I think he'll be a bit better in 2025 than this year, but how much better is the question? I don't know. All right, next name here. We got two more on the bad side here. This one's actually a reliever, and we're going with David Bednar, who was one of the more solid relievers of the last few years until this year. And he wasn't even that good in the first half, though a bit better than he was in the second half. But from August through the end of the season, Bednar in 21 and a third innings and a 7.17 ERA. And nearly as many walks as strikeouts, 18 walks to 22 strikeouts. This is a guy that had a 2 ERA on the nose in 2023 with 39 saves, 261 in 2022 with 19 saves. That's when he started becoming used as a reliever, or excuse me, as a closer more and more. And he had a 233 ERA in 2021. So his first 3 years with Pittsburgh, he had an ERA under 2.7 and was becoming one of the best relievers in the game and top 10 fantasy arm, a guy that I actually invested in, you know, a good amount this year, which obviously did not work out. But do you think Bednar can bounce back, Chris? Like, obviously, again, he was very good for 3 years, and then this year became almost unusable, and I think he was even dropped at times. But are you looking to maybe buy low and still invest in him in 2025 and beyond?
Yeah, I think so. It's hard to look and say, here was the reason. It wasn't like anything changed substantially to make him fall off. Like, you know, fastball velo was actually up. The pitch movement, the shapes were all very similar. Look at the spin rates. They remained good. Just walking through everything I normally walk through, it's interesting to look at it and say, like, all right, what went wrong here? Well, the release points changed a bit. So that's obviously something of note. Like, maybe he was just off a hair, given the fact that we saw those release point changes. Like, why did that happen? Who knows? The smallest mechanical thing can cause something to change. So that's worth noting. His arm angle was actually different. So that's another thing. It's like your arm angle changed by 4 degrees. That's telling me that he was just a bit off and he couldn't find it. New release point, just didn't have it. Now, given the track record of success with Bednar, it's like, all right, you still believe that something's here. You know, the four seam I mentioned remained good. You know, while it was hit a little bit more, I look at it and you had a 256 batting average against compared to a 188 batting average against in 2023. Okay, that's obviously a pretty substantial jump, but why? He missed less bats for one. The average exit velocity was a bit higher and the launch angle was a bit higher too, which did lead to some more home runs. So the home runs are the first issue that I look at and say, okay, that in itself was a bit of an issue there. And then I look at the secondary splitter. Okay, he used it much more this year. So like that was a change. He increased the usage of the splitter. It actually got much better results than it did in 2023, which that's a positive step. And it missed, had a 36.5% whiff rate. That's really good. So diagnose that and say, all right, looks good. Curveball, also really solid, other than the fact that it just didn't miss bats. 172 batting average against, a 310 slug with a 243x slug against it. Like, that'll absolutely play. But why did he go from a 40% whiff rate on the curveball in 2023 to a 24.5% whiff rate on the curve in 2024? So that's obviously a huge thing of note here. Is that change obviously had a major effect on him, because the curveball was a good pitch, and this year it just didn't miss bats at all. So I look at it and say, why? What's the difference here? And I think that's something he's just going to figure out location-wise, because everything remained pretty similar when we look at from year to year. Just that release point that I mentioned, the location, I think, that's a big thing that I've seen with a lot of these guys we've discussed, is just the location, the breaking ball, not often great. When I compare the charts, the heat maps, at least from 2023 to 2024, and he's leaving substantially more curveballs over the heart of the zone this year. Four-seam location, I think he can bounce back. Also a thing of confidence at some point too with closers. Lose the confidence, you've been bad, like hard to recover mentally too. So I certainly think he can bounce back.
Yeah, either two, and maybe even to, you know, pre-2024 levels. Like, I want this office is like a fluky bad year for him. It was odd though to see, after coming off maybe the best year of his career last year in 2023, ERA of 2, career high 39 saves, over a strikeout per inning, 80 Ks and 67 in the third innings, to switch up the usage rate of his three pitches. Primarily the four seamer was same usage rate, went down 2.5%, but he went in 2023 curveball 25.4%, splitter 16.6, and then changed the splitter up to 24%, curveball down to 20.4. So up about 7.5% on the splitter, down 5% on the curveball. So that's interesting to see. But I'm going with track record here. And like you mentioned, there was no glaring, oh, velocity was down or this or that. There was no major things. You can point out a little bit here, a little bit there, but nothing, no major red flags here in the profile. You know, the quality of contact did go up. Barrel rate went up 4%. EV went up over 2 miles an hour. So stuff like that is discouraging to see. He was one of the better relievers in baseball for the last few years. So I'm expecting a nice bounce back here and a pretty big one as well. If he can get that walk rate back down, that went up 3%. I think the K rate's got a rebound. He's only 30 years old. And again, Pittsburgh, pretty good team there in terms of player development. So I think they can get him back on track here. So I'll still be investing next year, especially at the lower cost in drafts. And you know, if I can buy low, now, this is an ideal candidate to buy low on. The last down here, we're going to group these next two together, the last down and the first good finisher of the season, because they are on the same team. So we got George Kirby and Bryce Miller of the Seattle Mariners. You know, Kirby overall had another Kirby season, but finished the season on a poor note here with a it wasn't terrible like some of the other names on here, but had a 4.75 ERA and .270 batting average against. Down the stretch, though, the xFIP and Sierra were in the upper threes. But on the other side here with Bryce Miller, Miller had a 1.86 ERA, but xFIP and Sierra are actually pretty close to Kirby's, about half a run lower on both of those. But he also had a 28.1% strikeout rate, 7.2% walk rate, and a 1.67 batting average against. But I've been starting to wonder. Obviously, people that know me know that I've been pretty high on Kirby for the most part, dating back to his days as a prospect. And he's had a fine major league career. He's been actually pretty consistent in his major league career, and obviously has a high floor because he's one of the best control and command guys in baseball. Walk rate of 3%, but is this what he is? Is he a mid-3 ERA guy with a slightly above-average strikeout rate? That's what he's been basically his entire career so far. And Bryce Miller, I think, gets ranked a lot lower than Kirby, but should he? Miller was better than Kirby this year. He had a 2.94 ERA. He had a slightly better K rate and had a much better K rate over the last 2 months of the season. But before we get really into Miller, we're going to go into Kirby here. I don't think there's any cause for concern here, Chris, with how Kirby finished the year. Obviously, he's been very consistent, as I mentioned. But I guess my question for you is, should Kirby still be ranked as an ace for fantasies? I still see him in a lot of top 10s, top 15s. And maybe should he be more down in like that 20 range? I guess that's my question for you right now with George Kirby.
I think looking at Kirby, I think we keep waiting and waiting for the strikeouts to come. And I just wonder if they ever do. So obviously, what we know about Kirby, he's the highest floor probably of any arm in baseball. So I think that's obviously pretty notable. You're getting safety. He has a career walk rate of 3.1%. It was 2.5% in 2023 over 190 and two-thirds innings. And then he threw 191 innings this season with a 3% walk rate. 20% K-minus BB every year of his career. Durable innings eater, but he's not missing the bats that you want to see. Swinging strike rate did go up this year, 0.5%. Probably not a lot to write home about with that kind of jump. I'm not sure we see Kirby get to the strikeouts that we want him to get in order for him to truly be that kind of ace arm. And I'm not saying it's impossible. I think that he could, because he checks a lot of boxes here. He has a lot of things that you want to see. The control is impeccable. He's going to hit his spots pretty much every time, which helps the floor. Highest floor of pretty much any pitcher, in my opinion, in baseball. But yeah, I think you have to really, for fantasy, you need to pair Kirby with a guy that's going to give you strikeouts. So he's good in a lot of context, but I also think that the lack of strikeouts, you really want that from your ace. And I think you really have to think about that and consider, is he going to strike out enough guys to truly ascend up to like that ace status? Now, you look at the game logs, he had a pretty rough stretch, and I think he was actually spared a bit in one of those starts against Detroit in August. He allowed 11 runs, but only six earned. I'm pretty sure it was a scoring change that, if I'm not mistaken, that really helped him out there. And then he had a couple, he had a five spot at the end of the month against the Angels. He had a five spot in September against the Padres. So there were some rough outings that don't typically see from Kirby, but it's mitigated by the fact that, again, he's throwing so many innings. He's in majority of starts allowing two earned runs or less. I would have to count them up, but there was quite a few starts in which he did allow two or less, which is an encouraging sign. If I'm not mistaken, quick math in my head, it'd be 22 of his 33 were two earned or less. So I think overall Kirby's fine. But again, like, it depends on how you want to structure your team. I think he's not going to set you back a ton from strikeouts, just given the amount of innings that he throws. But I do think that, in a sense, it's okay. You need strikeouts from your ace. Is he really giving you enough? And if you believe so, then that's fine. His whip should be lower given the low walk rates. But, and while 107 is fine, like, that's a really good whip, you'd really want an ace to be like sub one, especially somebody with Kirby's command control. So, yeah, I think Kirby's a top 15 arm. Still want to see him take a jump with strikeouts, but haven't seen it yet. And I wonder if we actually do.
Yeah, that's what I've been wondering as well. And you look at what you look for from an ace. I'm looking at a guy that could strike out 200 in the season, because that kind of combines two things. A, it's going to be a pretty good K rate. It doesn't have to be 30%+. Obviously, that's wonderful, and that's what separates the elite from the very good. But even if you're like a 26% K rate guy, given that rate plus enough innings, because you want, obviously you want the volume. You don't want your ace only going 120 innings a year. That's why we don't consider DeGrom a fantasy ace anymore. Some people still do when he's healthy. We can't trust him for that. Or guys like Glasnow, you gotta be able to trust your ace to give you the volume. And Kirby does. Kirby's made at least 31 starts each of the last 2 years. So, but he's been in that 170 to 180 strikeout rate range because the K rate's been right around league average or, you know, a hair above it. I would love to have Kirby as my two. I'd be absolutely ecstatic, whether that be redraft next year or dynasty. Kirby's my two. I'm feeling really good about that. He falls in that range with like Aaron Nola, Logan Webb, these guys that don't blow you away and have those elite strikeout rates, but they give you good enough and have that volume as well. So guys like that, I think, are ideal number twos. Freed has been that way for a while as well. I think Kirby falls into that range. And yeah, I'd have him ranked ahead of most of those guys, but I don't think he's in that top 15 range for me. I think I have him like more like SP, like 19, 20. I think he's still a top 20 arm, but can we ever see the K rate tick up? And that's why leading into this next guy, Bryce Miller, and then obviously, and also shout out to Logan Gilbert. Gilbert was a guy I had in this range where Kirby is now. That's why I didn't go top 10 with Logan Gilbert, but Gilbert had a K rate above 30% over the final, I think it was like 12 starts of the year. It's like, all right, if Gilbert's going to be elite K rate guy, he might be a top five arm. Miller is showing similar kind of characteristics to Kirby. Is he as good of a walk rate guy? No, but he's still an above average, or I should say better than league average walk rate guy at 4.8% his rookie year and 6.4% this year. So that's 2% better than league average. So good there. And had a 24.3% K rate overall. But again, you look down the stretch here and it was 28.1% over the final 2 months of the season with a 167 batting average against. He had a lower ERA and whip than Kirby this year. So I think the gap between these two is not very large at all. They're the same age. They're both 26 years old. Yeah, you could say Kirby has a higher floor than Miller, but I don't think it's a terribly large gap there. Miller himself pitched 180 innings this year, and I think he has a higher floor than most arms as well. And maybe you could say he even has a bit higher upsides. If I can get, I want to see where the ADPs for these two guys wind up next year. But I imagine there's probably at least going to be 10 pitchers in between these two in terms of where they fall in ADP. So I think Miller is a great buy right now because I think he's nearly as good as Kirby and doesn't get nearly as much love in the perceived value. I think there's still a pretty sizable gap in their perceived value. And the way he ended the year, sub 2 ERA over the final, I think it was probably 12, 13 starts for him. K minus BB rate was 20.8%. You know, doesn't give up a lot of contact overall. There's a lot of good here with Bryce Miller, and I'm buying into it. I think he could be a top 25 or maybe even a top 20 arm moving forward here. What are your thoughts on Bryce Miller, Chris?
Yeah, Miller has just been like pretty consistent, and it's a guy that I wasn't sure if we'd have the consistency from. He made some strides in 2023, which kind of hinted at a breakout, but then this year took the step forward, though 180 innings, sub 3 ERA, sub 1 whip, strikeout total 24%. Like, not great, but it plays. He's interesting in the sense of like, he feels like he should strike more guys out just given the stuff. Like, the quality of stuff is very good. It's one of the best fastballs in the majors, in my opinion. Just the uniqueness and the traits of that offering where it's high VB from that release point. It's 95, 96, locates well up in the zone. He's got a pretty diverse arsenal too. He added that splitter this year. And I just wonder, like, why are you not striking more out? Like, why are you using the sinker as often as you are? Like, if I could pull the plug on his sinker, like, I probably would. I just don't see a reason for him to throw that 17% of the time. I get it. It's the pitch that you can go to get ground balls, to get some outs, but you have the bat missing stuff between your four seam splitter and sweeper. I'd like to see those utilized a bit more. I do the complete arsenal here, though. I like the improvements that I've seen Bryce Miller make with strike throwing, with his ability to limit the walks, to miss bats. I think there's a lot to like here. So ultimately, yeah, I'm pretty in on Miller. From a standpoint of who do I prefer, if we're just like going down this rotation in Seattle, I'd probably have Gilbert at the top. I think he's, I guess, Luis Castillo. Don't want to forget about Castillo. He's been obviously Luis Castillo. We've got five really good arms here. All of them, I think you could make an argument for being potential top 100 overall, like fantasy assets. That's how good it is. But I'm looking at something like Castillo, Gilbert. Like, I think both those guys are extremely good, even though Gilbert might have an argument above Castillo at this point. Yep. So I don't know. Like, looking at it on the surface, maybe I do prefer Gilbert. He made jumps with strikeouts. He limited walks. He threw a ton of innings. So yeah, give me Gilbert one. I'll say Gilbert, Castillo, Kirby, until I see him take the step with strikeouts. Kirby and Miller are both pretty close, then followed by Wu.
Yeah, no, I definitely have Gilbert ahead now. And I think, and that's no slight to Castillo, but like I mentioned, especially if Gilbert's able to keep that K rate higher, even if it's not 31, 32%, wherever it was final 2 months of the season, even if he's like 27, 28, 29% in that range, I think he's the one there for fantasy. Then Castillo. And I think Castillo, Kirby, and Miller actually are all pretty close. And then Wu is five, which is nothing against Wu. He's been pretty solid as well, but just in an absolutely loaded rotation in Seattle. But yeah, I think there's some good values there with Miller, with even with Wu. I think their perceived value is a bit lower, so they're good targets there. And yeah, I think Miller could be a top 25 starter. He was a top 20 starter last couple months of the season. Even look back at his last nine starts, his ERA was 1.34. And had a couple of good starts even before. He had one kind of bad start in July, but he was pretty good in July as well, though the K rate didn't tick up for him until more so in August and September. And if that sticks, maybe we see Miller go ahead of Kirby. I think that's definitely a possibility here in 2025. Now, going to Chris's Atlanta Braves next for this one. Reynaldo Lopez made a absolutely stellar transition from the bullpen to the rotation, where he was a pretty good bullpen arm leading into 2024 at an ERA of 276 and 327 respectively in 2022 and 2023, and then went into the rotation, and we saw him back in spring training and he looked pretty good in that outing. We saw, like, all right, let's see if this is turns into something, and it sure did. In 135 and two thirds innings for Lopez, ERA of 199, didn't have enough innings to qualify for the ERA title, but definitely would have been up there. Though I think the Skeens go below him. Skeens also was not eligible, but I know those two, if you dropped it down to where they were in innings, were both pretty close. Where did Skeens end up at? 196 and 133 innings. So he would have had him by 0.03. But yeah, Lopez was a draft day gem, or in shallower leagues, you maybe picked him up early in the year. So to go with that 199 ERA, had a 111 whip, 7.7% walk rate, and a 27.3% strikeout rate. But at the same time, his xERA was nearly double at 3.88. Chris, what are you making of Lopez here? Obviously, I don't think he's going to be 2 ERA good again, but you see a path where he's still like a top 30 to 40 arm, or are you expecting some pretty solid regression here from him moving forward?
I think the only thing that you really have to worry about is the shoulder, though he did come back and look fine at the end here. I mean, what he did against Kansas City in a must-win game for Atlanta, actually. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned, 9K, 0 walks. And then he comes off that 2 days later in the doubleheader against the Mets and throws a clean, perfect inning with 2 strikeouts. Tells me he's all right. Like, I'm not particularly worried about that injury at all. Is there regression? Absolutely. There's no way we look at a sub-2 ERA guy again. Like, that's ace-level stuff. But I think you look and you say, okay, the FIP was 2.92, the xFIP was 3.44. Like, those are pretty good indications of the kind of pitcher Lopez can be. The arsenal, really good here. You hope he makes the jump, 135 innings. You need him to probably get where he's going to go in drafts. You probably need him to throw 150 to 160, and you hope that 160 should be the mark that you want him to get to. And I think that he could return value. Like, you don't need him to put up the kind of elite season that he did this year in order to get to that mark. He's got the arsenal. He has a lot of good that, yeah, I think really stands out in my opinion. Four-seam being the biggest weakness, but at the end of the day, like, even that being your weakness and not missing a ton of bats, you still look at it and say, all right, it didn't allow any damage. He had just 2 home runs allowed on that pitch all year. It had a 3.16 wOBA against, despite having a pretty high average EV. That'll play. I think he did enough good with that fastball to say, all right, I can go the slider, 44% whiff rate. I can go the curveball, it's a 36% whiff rate. You look at the changeup, 35% whiff rate. Now, it's interesting because pretty much against righties, it's four-seam slider. Against lefties, though, it's like, all right, now you got 4 pitches. Good luck, because the curve and the changeup were mostly used against just lefties. So he's dominant against lefties with that those 4 pitches, but he's really good against righties too. Obviously, get guys out. I think that at the end of the day, if you peg Ronaldo Lopez to say, all right, this is a guy that probably gives you a 3.3 to a 3.5 ERA next year over 160 innings with similar strikeout numbers, I'll sign up for that. I think that's exactly what you want to see from him. And probably given the draft price, which I have no clue where it'll be, I think that's a pretty good mark. And trust the Braves. Their pitching dev is extremely good. Their pitching coaches are extremely good. I'm not sure why the narrative's floating out there that it's not, because I keep hearing that. Just look year over year at the results. And I'm not sure you can really argue it even this year, given the fact they lost so many starters. But Lopez, yeah, regression's coming, but I still think he can be good.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too with Lopez. Obviously, he's not going to be a fantasy ace or anything like that, but you know, he's missed enough bats. He's been 27.3% this year, was near 30% last year out of the bullpen, obviously. He can miss bats. And even if the ERA jumps back up into the threes, like, this is still like a top 50 or so arm. That's where I'm ranking him moving forward. But I was interested to see, I know it's super early, but there has been 3 completed drafts on NFBC. So I want to see where he was taken. Oh, that's the wrong Lopez. So ADP in these first 3 drafts, 135.7, right around for other starters near him. Jared Jones, Shane Boz, Justin Steele are the 3 above him. Below him, Sonny Gray, Robbie Ray. Why is Robbie Ray that high? That's interesting. But Sonny Gray, Robbie Gray, and oh, look, the next guy on our list, Yusei Kikuchi, in that range as well. Again, super early, only 3 drafts, but wanted to see where I think he settles in that 150 range or so. I think that's pretty fair for Lopez. And if I can get Lopez as my, I wouldn't want him as my SP2, but SP3, I think I'd be fine with him. SP4, I would love. So yeah, definitely still in on Lopez, but yeah, probably some regression coming next year, but still a good arm moving forward. Was it really funny to see his walk rates for Lopez throughout his career? I don't think I've ever seen somebody that's all over the place year to year with walk rate. So debuted in 2016, 11%, then 11 down to 6.8, up to 9.4, down to 8, up to 12.4, down to 5.9, 4.3, up to 12.2, down to 7.7. Year to year, the fluctuation with his walk rate is insane, but hopefully he doesn't go back up to that 12% range. If you keep it below 10, I'll be okay with that. But yeah, next guy on the list here, Yusei Kikuchi, who was a completely different arm after he was traded to the Houston Astros and was really a sneaky good pitcher overall down the final 2 months of the season, where he had a 2.70 ERA. He had a 31.8% strikeout rate, only 5.9% walk rate. WHIP was under 1 at 0.93. And he had a 187 batting average against. He was going slider a little bit more down the stretch, or actually a lot more. Slider was used. See, leading into August, he had a 20% usage rate on the slider in July. In June, it was 14.2, 15.4 in April, and 17.9, excuse me, in May, and then 17.9 in April. So 15 to 20% range. That jumped to 35.9% in August and 38.9% in September, which he actually used that pitch more than any other pitch, even more than his four-seamer. And he was getting a lot of good results on. He was going really heavy with a four-seam slider, some curveballs and changeups mixed in as well. But really, that was the big difference to him. They wanted him to go with that slider a lot more, and it was definitely working for him. With him, he's 33, Chris. He's a bit older than most of the other names we've already talked about today. What are you taking from this late season kind of surge with Houston, and how are you applying it to 2025?
Yeah, so it's definitely interesting what changed, like what caused the success in Houston. And I think you look at it and it comes down to slider. Like the slider usage jumped substantially. You look, it was tracking like 15, 18% prior to the trade, jumps up to 37% after the trade. Slider was actually his most used offering in September. Really strong whiff rates against with that pitch, 28% in August, 31% in September. So you like to see that, him just using the four seam less and going to that slider, which paid big dividends. Also, curveball usage up substantially, changeup usage went down a hair, not all that notable, but when you see the, when you see a drop of 20% in the four seam, I think that's a big note for me. It's like, all right, sequence your pitches a little bit better. The four seam is a good offering. Like, it has been a good offering for Kikuchi. And that really did it for me, where I look at it and say, all right, like, this was a completely different arsenal and it worked. Like, the usage change was huge for him. And it just took a small little tweak for somebody saying, like, hey, we need to see an adjustment in this pitch. And it worked. So do I think that it can stick? Yeah, absolutely. I think that I look at Kikuchi and say, all right, definitely a strong chance of him being really good moving forward despite the age, because he's really been good for the majority of his career. Yep. When you look at it, it's not like it's something where he's not been great. But this year, he was fine, and then he went to being really good after the trade. He's a free agent. It seems like to me like he could re-sign in Houston. I think that would make sense. Does he? I have no idea, but the fit seemed to be really good there. We've seen him pitch in Seattle and Toronto in his time. So who knows where he lands, but you know, in the right pitching org, stay in Houston. I think that makes the most sense for him. But I'm actually really buying what he did and the changes, because there was like a tangible change. And oh yeah, look, the results came with it. So yeah, I'm definitely buying Kikuchi.
Yeah, no, Kikuchi's been pretty good for a bit now. He's had an above average K rate each of the last 5 years. And each of the last 3 years has been 25.9% or higher, 28% overall this year. And the walk rate dropping down, I think, was huge the last couple of years. He was 9, 10, even up to 12.8% back in 2022, but he's been below 7% each of the last 2 years. Maybe, obviously, he's not going to be a high-impact arm. I don't think he's going to be like a top 25 arm or anything like that, but he's shown the ability to miss bats. Now, the walk rate improving is huge, and if he could be like a mid to upper 3 ERA guy with an above average strikeout rate, that is a very valuable arm. That's probably a top 50 or so fantasy arm. So yeah, I think there's a lot of legitimacy here with what he did. Like we mentioned, there was that tangible change with the arsenal going with more sliders, and you know, he's only 33, so he's not like 38, 39, anything like that. So I think the next couple of years, I think he's a decent target for a contending dynasty team. I don't think you're really looking at him if you're rebuilding or a few years away, but if you're a contender looking for another, you know, solid arm to add to your mix, I think Kikuchi's a very good target. All right, next guy here. We'll keep it in Houston and go with a guy nearly 10 years younger, Spencer Arrighetti, who thought Spencer Arrighetti would do what he did down the stretch. Started off his major league career pretty inconsistent, as you expect with most major league rookies. But over the final 2 months of the season, you know, we're looking at, where'd he go? I just lost him here. There we go. A 284 ERA, a 116 whip, and a 30.7% strikeout rate. He had the 10th best strikeout rate among pitchers with at least 30 innings over the final 2 months of the season, and the 12th best K-minus walk rate at 23.4% as well. Look at the overall, it was 453 for ERA, but again, he pitched, he had an ERA in the sixes before he went on this run. So pretty phenomenal how he ended the season. Really a six-pitch arsenal here, but really five. You only throw a few sliders. Four-seamer, 41%. Curveball around 20. Cutter around 20%. Sweeper around 11%. Changeup, 8.5%. Pretty mixed results on those three offerings here. Changeup, 395. Batting average against. Four-seamer, 303. Curveball was a really good offering for him. And also the sweeper. Both of those had a whiff rate in the vicinity of 40%, give or take a little bit either way, with a batting average against under 200 and slug allowed under 300. So a couple of pretty good breaking balls. And the fastball could maybe be improved a little bit here. Pretty interesting overall profile here with Arrighetti, Chris. We had a lot of talented pitchers that debuted this year, a lot of talented young arms in this game in general. Where do you value a guy like Arrighetti moving forward, who wasn't really the big prospect name, but finished the season very strong?
Yeah, he's certainly somebody that's got the talent. We saw it. I think he's shown flashes of it throughout the minor leagues, but to see what he did was really impressive. And to punch out 171 batters in 145 innings, like, that really stands out. I look at Arrighetti and, you know, obviously there's some flaws. It's any young pitcher, you're going to see some mistakes. And I think that he showed those. He showed some inconsistent four-seam command, which, you know, did allow him to get hit around a little bit. But the curveball is deadly. Sweeper's a really good offering. The cutter's a good bridge pitch. Changeup really good to lefties. Like, he's got a deep arsenal of pitches. And I think that he showed the improvements that you want to see. Like, you want to see a young arm get better throughout the year, and that's exactly what he did. And to see the results down the stretch, I don't know. I really am buying what he did. I think, what do we expect him to be, I guess, is the question mark. Curious if you pull up like where he's been drafted, I'm pretty much buying in completely to what I saw. There's inconsistencies, like start to start. Some starts he has more case than others. He's had a couple of bad starts here and there, but for the most part, really dominant second half of the season, and especially August forward, where I look at it and say, all right, I can truly buy into this. The command made some strides. That's a big part of his game that had to improve. And this is exactly what he did. To see the walk rate trend downward was huge. The final 10 starts actually, 31% strikeout rate to an 8.3% walk rate. That'll absolutely play. He was locating much better. I'm pretty in on Spencer Arrighetti.
Yeah, his ADP, again, just three drafts in the first half of October, but about 250. It's 248.67 so far, in a similar range to Jose Berríos, Lodolo, Gavin Williams, Ranger Suarez, Yu Darvish, Nestor Cortes, Ryan Nelson, Luis Severino. And then we get Andrew Painter and Bubba Chandler right below him as well. Yeah, 250 range. I'm definitely fine with that.
That's a good price tag.
Yeah, we'll see if that moves up. I wonder if it will. I'm closer to 200 than 250, but if it stays in that 250 range, at that point in a 15-teamer, that's your, what, like 16th, 17th pick. So you've got to imagine SP5, SP6 or something like that. I'm more than happy having him as my SP5, SP6. I think that's pretty good range. And then just real quick before we get to our last name here, I was looking at the two Seattle guys we talked about a little while ago. Kirby so far is the eighth, or, well, Otani here. So I don't, we'll say seventh SP off the board at in the mid 30s, and Bryce Miller is in the mid 70s. So I would much rather have Miller at 75 or so than Kirby at around 35. But all right, last guy on the board here is Bowden Francis. Where is he right now? His ADP early is 173. Wow. But wow, did he have a dominant end to the season here. I don't think anybody, even his own family, would have seen this type of stretch coming from Bowden Francis, who over the final 2 months of the season had a 153 ERA. The only ones lower were Blake Snell and Rhett Lauder, who only really factors in because I lowered that innings pitch threshold to 30. But Bowden Francis also had a 0.53 whip over that stretch. 0.53. The next lowest was 0.83, which was both Framber Valdez and Reynaldo Lopez, who we just talked about. 121 batting average against, but and also 26.5% K rate, 3.3% walk rate. So numbers across the board, final 2 months of the season for Bowden Francis were very good. But also, I think Lady Luck was right by his side during this. I'm not saying he's bad, but he had a 125 BABIP over this time. The next lowest was 200, which was Shane Boz. It's a sizable gap, and 125 is absolutely, obviously not sustainable. Also had a 99.2% strand rate over this time, which was 7% higher than anyone else, which was Zach Eflin. A lot of luck factored into this. His ERA metrics were more in like the mid to upper threes range here. But again, Chris, that's not to say that Francis can't be a solid fantasy arm. But the question is, like, where does he kind of rank? Is he a higher impact guy, top 30 or so? Or is he more top 50 to 75 range? And that's where I have him as of now. His top three offerings had a whiff rate below 25%. It was really the slider, which he only used 9.2% of the time, that had a whiff rate above 40%. And he started using that a little more, you know, down the stretch. It went up to 11.5% and then 13%. So maybe that's a trend that continues, and that'd be nice to see. But I don't know. I'm definitely more in the sell high camp with Francis. Again, I think he could be a 50 to 75 SP in rankings, but if you can still get a top 50 price tag for him right now, I would definitely look to sell, because this was a ridiculous run, and I think he's going to come back crashing down to earth here in 2025. But what are your thoughts here on Bowden Francis?
Yeah, obviously the breakout like completely coincided with a pitch mix change. And when that happens, obviously that matters. When you see a player take a step and they're like, all right, they did something different, completely buy in. Okay, there was a reason why this happened. And for Francis, I look at it, I do agree there was a lot of luck on his side. I think we're probably looking at some pretty serious regression, and the price tag, that the ADP early, very early ADP, is pretty interesting from the standpoint of I'd rather take my shot on Arrighetti, honestly. And I think that Francis has some intrigue about him. There's some traits that I look at and say, all right, I like these things. I like some of the characteristics on the four seam. The splitter was obviously a pitch that he utilized much more this year, and especially down that stretch, and really paid off. It's throwing the slider, curveball. I don't know. I just look at the entire arsenal and think that a lot of it kind of hinges on the fastball play, which was good. It played very well. Will that continue to play sitting lower 90s? In September, he dropped 91.5 miles an hour, which is pretty notable. Otherwise, around 93, actually trended downward all year. If we're actually looking at it that way, it's like, all right, that's interesting to see too, especially down the stretch to from July 94 miles an hour to September 91.5. What's going on there? I think that it's just worth keeping an eye on. I like Francis. I'd like Francis much more at the 250 price tag versus what's at 173.
Yeah. Yep. No. I'm right there with you. I would rather have Arrighetti. I think Francis can be a decent arm. I think he maybe settles in more like in the Jose Barrios range, a mid-3 ER league average-ish K rate, and that's still a fantasy viable arm. But I think anyone that thinks he's going to be an impact arm is going to be let down. I don't see him as top 25, top 30, top 40 arm moving forward, and more in like that 50 to 75 range, which again is still decent. But yeah, that was a ridiculous run, something that I don't think anybody saw coming. That is going to wrap us up, though. This is our last episode before we're out in Arizona. This will be a lot of last couple episodes that week. We're out in Arizona, including that live podcast from First Watch Arizona, which we will be recording on that Thursday night, which I want to say is that Halloween night that we're recording that on? I believe it is.
Yes, I think you're correct.
Yep. So I don't know when that'll be out. So it might be a weird posting day. We're not cut sure about that as of now, but we'll definitely have multiple episodes the week we're out in Arizona, and a lot of other good content. We have a lot of FYPD stuff coming up, obviously some Arizona Fall League stuff. So a lot of fun stuff on the docket for the next few weeks, but we will see you again next week. And until then, everyone take care.
Did you know Tide has been upgraded to provide an even better clean and cold water? Tide is specifically designed to fight any stain you throw at it, even in cold. Butter? Yep. Chocolate ice cream? Sure thing. Barbecue sauce? Tide's got you covered. You don't need to use warm water. Additionally, Tide Pods let you confidently fight tough stains with new ColdZyme technology. Just remember, if it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide.